Welcome to this week's episode of Virginia Outdoor Adventures Podcast. Each week, we bring outdoor adventure stories and recommendations from athletes, conservationists, authors, park guides, community leaders, and local business owners from across the Commonwealth. I'm your host, Jessica Bowser. Today's guest, Brian Bell, is the founder of the Richmond-based nonprofit Keep Virginia Cozy. An experienced backpacker, hiker, cyclist, and rock climber, Brian transformed his appreciation for the outdoors into a movement that has resulted in the removal of thousands of pounds of litter from Virginia parks, trails, and waterways while cultivating an outdoor community. Brian has been described by friends and conservationists as a do-gooder, and I think you'll agree. Brian and I connected as he was en route to one of his many outdoor adventures. Let's go. Brian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So tell me, Brian, what does Keep Virginia Cozy mean? It's an interesting name, and I'm sure the listeners are going to be wondering. So can you explain what that means?
To me, Keep Virginia Cozy is the idea that I had behind it, wanting to start it, was that I wanted everybody, whether or not you grew here or you flew here, to feel comfortable and at home while you are here. You know, from anything from being comfortable just in front country campgrounds to backcountry hiking to anything like that. You know, I just wanted everyone who was here in Virginia to feel like they belonged here and that they were welcomed and that we were glad to have them.
Well, that sounds absolutely fantastic, and I'm definitely intrigued. Tell me a little bit more about what Keep Virginia Cozy does. What's your organization about?
Yeah, so we're definitely 100% an environmental-focused nonprofit. You know, we're trying to do anything and everything we can to leave places better than we found them and also seek out ways that we can improve things that might have been overlooked or maybe have played second fiddle to bigger issues. For instance, you know, we do a lot of trail work. We were pretty much started on the idea of litter cleanups. So Trashy Tuesdays, where we do litter collections and all of that, are kind of how we got most of our traction. But we've also morphed, because I'm also a big hiker, into doing trail work and things like that. And we also have a campaign called Wildlife Wednesdays, where we select different Virginia native animals and then do a project to help support them. We also bring in people from the Department of Game and Inland Fisheries to educate us about them. And then we work to see how we can support them going forward. And, you know, and it also just adds a little bit of education to everybody. So, you know, when you go out hiking in your local park and you hear an owl, you might actually learn what kind of bird that is for the next time. Like, oh, that's a barn owl. I feel like those things, when you learn more about where you currently are, make you feel ultimately more cozy there because it makes you feel part of it.
Absolutely. I mean, one thing that I am known for when I'm hiking is not that I'm a slow hiker, but I love to make sure that I am completely engaged in the hiking experience. And so I'm looking at the plant life, I'm looking at birds, I'm paying attention to what's underneath my feet, the geology, and sort of the whole experience of it. And so I totally know what you're saying when it makes you feel more connected, because it does. The more you understand your surroundings and your environment, the more you feel you're a part of it.
100%.
So let's go backwards a little bit. How did you end up founding Keep Virginia Cozy? What was it that sort of got you engaged, or what's your background that sort of led you to this endeavor?
Well, I guess my background is just that I've been outside since I could walk, basically. You know, I'm Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, I'm an Eagle Scout. I've always been an avid backpacker and hiker, well, rock climber as well. I like biking, you know, anything that gets me outside, which is where I found that I'm most at peace, are all things that I try to seek out as often as I can. And part of that for me has always been trying to make these places, you know, better for everybody, because you go on a hike and you go there because you want to see your hometown from the vantage point of that mountaintop, or you want to see a new view that you haven't seen before and get that little explorer feeling in your veins and things like that. You don't go up there because you want to see a Coors Light can next to an orange peel and things like that. So I've always packed that stuff out because if I can just make it better for the next person, that's great. And I started trying to get my friends to join me on those escapades and just, you know, hey, let's go do Old Rag this weekend. Everybody gets really excited. And then I would also give them a trash bag and they're like, wait, what? You know, it caught on really fast. And I have a lot of friends who had done those things anyway. So it wasn't really hard to get them to join me on the adventure. So we started off as a weekend group. We'd just get together when we could and be hanging out naturally anyway, and then just kind of pick up trash as we were leaving. And then we morphed it into, you know, just our Trashy Tuesdays was an idea that I had because it seemed easier to get people together after a work week than it was to try and organize a weekend. And then after we got some traction doing that for a while, I kind of thought that it would be really cool if we could get it to be self-sustaining in so much as just kind of paying for itself with the cost of the supplies and being able to receive donations and that kind of thing. So I looked into filing the paperwork to become a 501c3, and we went ahead and filed that. Well, we filed it in June of 2017, and we got our 501c3 approval July of 2017. And then we started being able to take donations, and we had some people invest right off the bat, you know, $20 here and $100 there, and all of that went right back into buying litter pickers and recycling bags that could be broken down and things like that, as well as, you know, some of our events when we would go up to Shenandoah and do things. We were able to pay for people's gas to get there when we had to carpool. So I guess it just kind of grew out of friends hanging out and trying to leave it better anyway, morphing into, okay, well, this is getting traction and people are excited to join and learn about these places, you know, so we can make a run at it and see if we can at least get this thing to cover itself. Fortunately, it has. And then it's also outgrown.
So how did you become aware of the trash problem? Is it because of all of the hiking that you were doing and the climbing and the time spent outside?
Yeah, I just keeping my eyes open. The thing is, the real bummer of the situation is everybody sees trash. You know, it's kind of like that saying, like, you can hear a bunch of stuff, but are you actually listening or not? Everybody sees trash, but not everybody is looking for trash. And then once you start looking for trash, the curse is you can't not see it anymore. Everywhere you go. Like some of these places, when I get up there, before I scan for an actual view, I find myself scanning the rock lines and making sure there's nothing like stashed underneath of a boulder, or there's no Snickers wrappers like stuffed in a tree hole or something. And it's kind of funny, you know, it's an interesting adjustment to see what I see first now. But yeah, I mean, it's everywhere. It's just whether or not you're looking for it. And a lot of times the people that look for it are the people that are looking to clean up and make these places better. So it's, you can see it. You just have to be looking.
I hear you on that, because a couple of years ago, I participated in a trash cleanup at a local creek, and there were those plastic store bags all over the place. And now plastic store bags have become like my biggest pet peeve. I see them on the road. I see them blowing around. And if you've ever tried to remove them, they get tangled up in branches and then they tear and they get caught under rocks. And so they end up like becoming all of these tiny little parts that are so hard to actually clean up. And they're all full of water and like total nastiness. So when you see them out there, it just drives me absolutely crazy.
Right. Between old plastic bags from grocery stores and slabs of styrofoam that are old and aged in the sun, and when you touch them, they explode into 1,000 miniature little balls. I have found the quickest way for me to go from no emotion to just blind rage for about 10 seconds, where I can just be like so infuriated that that exists and that's now something that is outside that needs to be cleaned up.
Oh my gosh, I completely hear you. Yes. So Trashy Tuesdays, where did you get the name from? I love the name.
Thanks. So it's kind of funny. I'm not sure. I think it's, what do you call it? The alliteration when you have two letters that are whatever the thing, like Trashy Tuesday or Wildlife Wednesday, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my name is one. So my initial is BB. For some reason, it just kind of popped into my head. And I've always thought those were kind of fun plays on words. So now we've kind of, we just this past week, launched a new one on Instagram where we're going to do, you know, because everything's done through a phone or a laptop or a tablet now. You know, keeping people engaged is great, but actually getting people to show up to a Wildlife Wednesday or a Trashy Tuesday can be difficult because everybody's schedule is different. But everybody who's on social media has time to scroll through, you know, their stories and their feeds and all that stuff. So we just launched one this past week called Flora Friday. So we're picking different, you know, flora of Virginia and highlighting it. And we just did one on mountain laurel so people can learn what it looks like, learn where to look for it, and learn what to do with it when you find it, which is just enjoy its prettiness and leave it alone, because you can actually get like a respiratory infection if you burn it in your campfire. So that's another fun one that we came up with. So I'm trying to monopolize every day of the week with some cool alliteration campaign thing.
I love it. That's really fun. So Trashy Tuesday, if you got started, what did you say? 2017 is when you founded your organization?
Yeah.
So what was Trashy Tuesday like back then? And what is Trashy Tuesday like today?
Trashy Tuesday back then was about 5 people every Tuesday. And of those 5, it was myself and my dad and my mom were a consistent 3. And then my friend Brian Pruitt has been to basically every Trashy Tuesday we've ever done. And then we were getting 1 or 2 new people every week, but they were kind of cycling out because not everybody, again, could do a Tuesday. So we might have 5 people in 1 week and then 5 people the next week, but one of them is a new person and things like that. So getting some traction there was interesting because we were brand new. Nobody knew about us. And I basically detest all things social media. So I wasn't really wanting to invest my time in making a presence known on social media. So we didn't really have much to go off of except word of mouth. So I was excited when anybody would show up. And then by by the end of the first year, we were averaging maybe, like, we were averaging numbers at the end of the first year, like what we saw last night. So about 16, 17 people each week, which is fantastic because that's 14 or 15 other people that I have somehow convinced to come out and pick up garbage. So I was really thankful for those numbers. And then over the winter, my friend Caitlin, who, if you follow our Instagram account, her Instagram is The Design Punk. She's a graphic designer for several companies in the Richmond area, but she gave us like a gift of a rebranding, like just everything. Because like I was telling you before in our phone call, like I never thought I was going to need a branded kit. Like my goal was to pick up trash so that the next time I went hiking, I didn't have to see styrofoam cup in a beer can. I never really put much thought into like what kind of colorway or font we should have for the flyers to do that. And she came through and was completely savvy to all that stuff and offered to help us. And so it helped us immensely. And we hit the ground running and we started getting the numbers at the beginning of the second year that we were seeing at the end of the first year, just because word of mouth. And it was an amazing thing to witness because honestly, like every time we would have a Trashy Tuesday, I would ask people that I'd never seen before, hey, how did you learn about this? Like, where did you pick this up and where did it come from? Because I didn't know them and I had started it. So I was interested and they were like, oh, my friend Amber came after work because her friend such and such that she works with came and had a great time. So it was literally all word of mouth and it was fantastic. But the second year we had numbers as high as we had like 62 people come out one time to Gillies Creek, which is over in the East End, Gillies Creek Park. And then we had our very last one, which was in October. Last year, we end in October every year just because daylight savings time and all that. We had 55 people at that one, but we were averaging our numbers for last season. We were averaging no less than like 35, 36 people at every cleanup. So at the minimum, it doubled in the first year to the second, which was amazing. And then some days, like I said, we'd have to send people off in teams to be litter hunters because we would run out of supplies to give people to pick up trash, which was a really cool problem to have. And then this year, the pandemic kind of punched us all and we're trying to figure out the safest way to get people back together because we never want to put anybody at risk or anything, you know, but we do want to kind of help people have a little sense of normalcy and feel like they can be doing stuff again. So it's been interesting to bring them together. But, you know, last night was a really, really awesome show of love and affection from the community to have 17 people come out in a time when we all have to stay at least 6 feet apart. No one can hug each other. And we're literally there to pick up garbage. It's been an amazing thing to watch. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen as we go from here. But it's been a really, really cool transition so far. So I'm only looking up for positive stuff from you.
Those are really impressive numbers. I mean, they were impressive numbers in the beginning. And then to grow like you did is really interesting. When people come out, are they coming out just to pick up trash? Or are there other reasons why they feel compelled to join you?
You know, I'm glad that they're there to pick up trash because that's point number one. But I think that a lot of it is, it's another good, from what I heard from outside people, it's hard as the person who started a group to figure out what other people take away from that group, you know? Like everybody has their own reasons for doing stuff. But, you know, from what I gathered, a lot of people enjoyed the social aspect of it. Like that was, it just became a really good, like, meetup kind of a thing. Like we had a lot of people actually last year came out because they had just moved to the area. And they wanted to meet people who were like-minded. So they thought, you know, hey, what better place to do that than a litter cleanup where these people are going to? And, you know, I think also, too, being adults and having the sponsorship of a local brewery helps a lot because we always usually, we wrap up our Trashy Tuesdays back on the patio of Awesome Brewery, which I don't think hurts at all because a lot of people are like, hey, okay, I can go get sweaty. I can pick up trash. I can meet cool new people. And then I can go wash it all down with a beer. Great. And then go home and be in bed by 9 o'clock and feel great about my day and have made a positive difference. And so it's, I think a lot of people come out for the social stuff and then they pick up trash while they're there. We did have a couple people that they had met. Apparently I learned this like the day of, which I just thought was funny. And then it became an experiment to watch and see how it unfolded. But, you know, they had met on Tinder or Bumble. And that was their first meeting, was that they brought them to a Trashy Tuesday as their first date.
As their first date.
Yeah. So I was like, I don't know if that's going to help y'all or hurt y'all if they brought you to garbage on day one. But it's, I think it went pretty well. Two of them I know are dating still. They're my friends. So that's kind of cool.
Oh my gosh. That is a really great social experiment and a great experiment for your organization too. Now you can brand yourself as the dating the first date opportunity in the Richmond area. Lord. So all of your Trashy Tuesdays in the Richmond area?
Yeah, so they are. right now, just because that's where we live, it's easier to get a base together after work in that immediate area. I was excited this year because I have a friend of mine who runs a gear shop in Charlottesville. It's called High Tour Gear Exchange, and they are a completely upcycled store. You know, you can't just go in there and buy like the brand new Patagonia stuff anywhere because people can sign their stuff and, you know, they sell everything and upcycle it. It's an amazing spot and I love it. But they reached out to us and wanted to kind of start a new chapter basically in the Charlottesville area. So we were going to run it out of their shop and he was going to be getting people together on Tuesdays. So we would be picking up stuff in Richmond and simultaneously there would be a group of people picking up stuff in Charlottesville, and then we would share all the posts and things like that. So we're trying to establish new chapters, you know, of things to do. We, right now, yes, they are only in Richmond just because that's where we are. And then this year, everything got sidebarred. But I'm excited. We just had some people relocate down to Southwest Virginia that were some good friends of ours. A buddy of mine lives in Abingdon. And so I think that they can probably get the ball rolling, you know, in due time with some cool stuff once they kind of set anchor down there. So I would really love if we could just get it to be like a Trans Virginia kind of movement of like, hey, you know, it's Tuesday. All right, sweet. Like, let's find our local spot that's holding a Trashy Tuesday, go meet up with them and go pick up trash so that literally every Tuesday, there's just different groups all over the state going out to do one solid effort.
So Brian, tell me a little bit about Trashy Tuesday, where they're located. Are they at different locations or can you expect to go to the same location all the time?
So they are different locations. They are on a rotating spreadsheet that we share with the James River Park System because they have an incredibly hardworking small crew of people. And so we split the difference with their workload. So they might be at Pony Pasture one week. So we're going to take over like Gillies Creek Park, or they might be at Texas Beach. So we're going to go hit the wetlands or things like that. So we try not to, you know, and there's never anything wrong with doubling up. We should happen to be in the same place. You know, that's many hands make light work kind of a thing, but it's more effective if we can spread out and kind of divide and conquer. So we're on a rotating spreadsheet with them. And we've got a couple other organizations that send us information. They're not all James River Park System either. So those see the most visitors. So those see also the most trash. But we actually, there's a lot of people that go to those things, you know, those areas, and they pack out their trash. So we also have a pretty helpful group there too. But we do have some neighborhoods that get hit pretty hard. You know, for instance, Forest Hill area, have being flanked by Forest Hill Avenue, which is amazing, you know, a really popular street, and that whole area is up and coming. But Westover Hills and that whole intersection where they intersect just sees a lot of trash because you see people coming from the north side across the river. And so a lot of those roadways just get clogged up. So we will do some neighborhood stuff too from time to time. We just kind of rely on people to let us know where they need it the most.
So what is the difference between Wildlife Wednesday and Trashy Tuesday?
So Trashy Tuesday is 110% focused on the garbage. You go out and pick up litter, you pick up recycling, we break it down, dispose of it properly. That's what that whole day is dedicated towards. A Wildlife Wednesday, certainly if we're out somewhere and there is trash, we're not going to leave it, but that's not the focus of it. That's a partnership that we struck up with it's VDGIF, so the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries. My friend Tom Wilcox over there is the head guy, and we have known each other for a few years, and we just kind of put together this. The way those got born, actually, was last August, I was sitting in my front yard, and I was just getting furious trying to read a book and getting destroyed by mosquitoes. Because for some reason, I have the constitution that if there's one mosquito within 10 miles, it's coming hellbent for leather directly towards me. Or the person beside me might not get bit at all. And I was trying to think of a way that didn't decimate the environment by just setting off an aerosol bomb and killing all of them within a 30-mile radius. And the thing that popped into my head was, you know, I was like, oh, I live in a house now. I have a place where I can actually put a bat box. So I'm going to build 8 of them. And I thought, you know, hey, so I don't know anything about bat boxes other than bats can eat up to, you know, 2,000 mosquitoes a night. And that sounds like something I want because I hate mosquitoes. So I reached out to Tom Wilcox and said, you know, hey, if you know anything about this, I'd really appreciate some information and maybe we could do something cool with it. And he said, hold on, let me get the phone. This sounds awesome. And he got somebody named Susan Watson, who's a biologist. And she knows everything there is to know about every single bat that has ever been born, bred, or breathed in Virginia. So we birthed this child like this idea because we're also partners with RVA Tool Bank, which if you haven't heard about them, they're who we get our tools from every week to do our Trashy Tuesday, our litter pickers, our safety vests, and that kind of thing. but their whole focus is getting tools in the hands of nonprofits. So I told them, I was like, you know, hey, you guys have the warehouse space and you need more people to get in the door to learn about you guys. We have 30 people who want to build bat houses, and we have two people from DGIF who want to talk about bats and, you know, inform and educate people. I was like, is there something here? Can we do something like this? And so we set up tickets on Facebook, the event. The first one we opened up was, I think we opened it up to 12 people, and we went live with it, the description of it and all that stuff. And we sold out in the first hour, all 12 tickets. So it was 25 bucks. Yeah. So for $25, that got you all the materials to build a bat house. It got you a bunch of bat related swag from the DGIF people. And so that was kind of cool. And then you got one beer if you were of age and you felt like it from Boston, because we had one of their things on draft. And then everybody went home with a bat house to hang up and hopefully eradicate some mosquitoes and stuff and help the bats out. And that was awesome. And so we had so many people reach out from that one that were like, oh crap, I didn't get a ticket, or oh, I didn't know this was happening, or please do this again. And so I was like, all right, well, this sounds like something that maybe if we had heard it once or twice, I was like, yeah, I don't know if that would be worth it again, because that's a lot of stuff. But we heard it so much, I was like, well, let's make another run for it. And the Wednesday just happened to be October 30th, the day before Halloween, essentially. And I told Tom Wilcox, I was like, well, what if in 2 months we do another one? And, you know, it's Halloween themed, which of course was all things bats and witches, spooky stuff. So we did another one, and we opened it up this time to 24. I was like, well, let's just double it and just see what happens. Well, we sold out all 24 tickets in the first day, and then we had a wait list of like 12 more people. So I was like, all right, well, how many people can we actually fit safely and slash, you know, power tools to that doesn't seem like a dangerous number, and kind of go from there? And so I reached out and was talking to Vossen, since we use their backspace tool bank with their tools. And so we ended up having like 32 people at that one that had all paid to be there and build one. That was so cool. So we sold that one out completely too. And then the fun thing was all the bat houses, you know, they're not very aesthetically appealing. You see it as just a brown plywood box. Like, they have to be dark in Northern Virginia, because North America, because that's what gets the most sun. That's what keeps the inside warm. They have to face the south and the most sun exposure. But seeing one, you're just kind of like, what the heck is that? It's a flat box. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was just like, well, the inside has to be dark. The outside has to be dark. But there's nothing saying we can't paint them and customize them. So I bought a few paint sets with a whole bunch of just acrylic paint colors off Amazon, set up a little station. And that became like the most popular part of the whole thing. Like, everybody put them together and did all that. And then everybody got to customize the front. So we had like, somebody did an artwork thing, and it was like the Hobbit theme. So it was like Bilbo Batkins. And then we had all kinds of like just crazy, hilarious, pun-related bat references that were just amazing. So Wildlife Wednesday got born out of my hatred for mosquitoes, but my love for the environment and not wanting to aerosol everything. And then we kind of morphed, because I was like, you know, there's more stuff in Virginia that even I don't profess to know anything. I didn't study environmentalism. I've just been outside a lot. So I know like 15 animals, but I know there's more than that, and I'd like to know what they are. So we started this whole project where we're going to, you know, work on possums and learn about raccoons and all these things that people might have like stigmas tied to, but like, hey, yeah, possums are gross and kind of gnarly looking, but like, they don't like us as much as you don't like them. So just leave them alone. And they also eat 10,000 ticks. So you hate Lyme's disease, like, love your local possum, you know, cause they're helping you out. So it's kind of a cool thing to learn.
Absolutely. I mean, that sounds like a great deal. So for a minimal fee, you get to create this awesome looking bat box. You get to help the environment. You get to hang out with your friends. You get to do something artistic. I mean, what's not to love about that? I can totally see why you sold out so quickly. Like, I want to sign up right now.
Right. Yeah. It's so much fun. And so to that end, we also had, you know, Maymont, which is like a local, I don't know if it's a foundation or if it's a park, but they have grounds that you can walk through, and they have wildlife all over the place. Wildlife handlers that work there. They have like a bear den and all kinds of stuff. And the bears they have there, some people get upset because they're like, bears shouldn't be in captivity. Agreed. But the bears they have there were rehomed problem bears. So the alternative for them was to have to put them down. So they ended up getting a pretty sweet deal, because they were geriatric, you know, so they might have found a bear. For instance, the two that are there now, one of them is a bear that was like 10 years old and kind of got to the point where he couldn't really fend for himself anymore. So he started hovering around places that had like picnic shelters and all this stuff. So instead of putting him down because he became a problem, they're letting him live out his retirement at Maymont, so people can like learn what a black bear is and what they look like and what they do. And so he's chilling. Like, he's having a great time. He wasn't removed from anything. If anything, he was given a longer life by having a place to get three meals and a bed. But they reached out. They have a new nature center, and they want to do Wildlife Wednesdays with us, too. That's what I meant to say.
So is that an upcoming event that we can expect to see in the near future?
Yeah. So once everything kind of goes back to whatever our new normal is going to look like, we had a few on the docket for, you know, the start of this year, which clearly has come and gone. But it's they just got renovated as well. So they were in the process, like in November, of redoing their whole nature center. So we're, you know, we're talking about having snake handlers and like alligator handlers. So you can come there and like look in the eyes of a baby alligator and like see somebody holding a barred owl or a raven, or, you know, be on the other side of the glass of a river otter and see that kind of stuff. So we're in talks with them to figure out what's going to look best for them, for us getting people in. But those are going to be, again, for, you know, whatever the ticket price ends up being, because they're going to be private after hour events. So anyone who gets a ticket there is going to have full run of the nature center with their very own wildlife specialist. So it's not going to be like you go there and there's 700 other people there trying to learn the same thing. It's going to be a real intimate, you know, series of events where you get to like learn and ask questions and be heard and walk away with some real knowledge of the stuff that lives in. You know, I was amazed what actually, if you were to put two walls up on like a 30-foot section of the river, just boom, and then 30 feet later, boom, the life that happens inside of that space just blew my mind. I knew the trash that happened as I picked it up, but I didn't know anything about, hey, there's an otter here, and otters love shellfish that also live this far upriver, and shellfish love these grasses that also are in the mud that we had. Like, it blew my mind to know that. And so it's just, I mean, it's insane. Like, it's so, so cool. And it's kind of selfishly, you know, motivated because I also want to learn those things. So it's more just, you know, okay, I'm going to figure this out too. And it's really cool if you guys want to be here, but I'm trying to learn as much as I can as a 33-year-old because it feels like I'm in earth science all over again.
Well, when you're the founder and you do all of the work on the back end that people don't see, then you get to decide what kind of cool event you're going to do.
Right. Yeah. Like, I'm just going to accept it like as a perk, which I'm totally okay with. So that works for me.
Absolutely. So we're going to have to include for our listeners some links in the notes section to be sure that anybody who wants to join you on a Trashy Tuesday or a Wildlife Wednesday knows where to go to be able to do that.
Yeah, right on. Absolutely. I can. So if you want me to say those now, I can. It's all of our stuff is just done basically announced through Instagram and Facebook. You know, well, our website too, where we currently don't have, we have a calendar page. We currently don't have anything on said calendar because no one knows what the calendar looks like. But there are people, you know, that don't have Facebook and don't have Instagram. And that's great. I wish I were one of them. So we have calendars on our website where people can see it. But other than that, we always post everything with as much notice as we can, which is usually at least a month's notice. Because, you know, it does take a lot for people who have kids to, you know, wrangle up getting them together and making sure they can be there and doing this and that and the other thing. So we try to give everybody as much notice as we can of our events. So they're always going to be public events posted on Facebook, Instagram, and on our meetup page. So just meetup.com/keepvirginiacozy. You can see all of it there.
That's fantastic. I'm sure people are going to go check that out. I know I'm going to check it out as well. And I'm looking forward to the day when there are some events that I can sign up for in the near future.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Like, it's, they have been so much fun. And to that, it just reminded me when you said, but there's other ways also to support those programs. So they're, you know, coming to them is always a number one. We would love to have you meet new people, see new faces, and then everybody gets to learn something and, you know, everybody gets to go home happy and having just a new experience for what would have normally just been a random day of the week. And those are always great. But our storefront page that's on our website, you know, go to our merchandise tab and then just click down to our store. You can see it. All of those shirts, stickers, and things that are on there for sale, we basically break even with those because the profits from those go to funding the things that they're talking about. So we have shirts specifically for Shenandoah National Park, the trail work that we do there. And those go back into covering things like our tool costs and our gas to and from, you know, materials because we might need to build a water bar. Or we have our Wildlife Wednesday shirts, which do things like help us cover the cost of hiring and getting the DGIF people there to share their expertise for a night and enlighten all of us. So that's another option. You know, if you live somewhere that you can't make it to that, you still get the information from those events sent to you, as well as a cool shirt to wear. And then when people ask you about it, you can say, oh yeah, I just helped rehome 1,200 bats, which just eradicated 30,000 mosquitoes. And that's a cool feeling.
Absolutely. So we'll be sure that those links are in the notes so that everybody can have access to them. I understand you're on your way to the mountains right now. What is it that you're going to be doing up there?
Yeah, so I am actually headed right now back to my parents are in Stanton. So I'm gonna stay there for the night and then meet up with my best friend tomorrow. We're going to ship out over towards the West Virginia line, Reddish Knob area, and then be working our way north from there, kind of stitching the state lines together as we go back and forth. I need some nature therapy. The pandemic keeping everybody indoors has been rough at best. And so we're trying to just kind of get out and knock the dust off and sleep outside and get back to rhythm as best we can. But we're going to check on one of the recycling bins we built and placed up there last year through a grant that we received, which was really, really awesome, to place three new recycling bins at some trailheads in the George Washington National Forest. And then the rest of the trail that we're hiking and putting together is part of a trail that I hiked last year as part of this thing called the Extreme Hike, which is to benefit cystic fibrosis research. So our friend Megan Adamson had kind of gotten me on to it. It was her idea. And so we went together and they did, her family and her partner put this whole thing together, and they raised over, this team is humongous. And it's an amazing thing to be part of, but they raised over $250,000 last year to go to cystic fibrosis research and eradication, all of that. It was really awesome to be a part of it, and it showed me new parts of the mountains that I grew up in that I hadn't walked on yet. And so we're stitching part of that together into our trip this weekend, because there was a really cool ridgeline that I wanted to see again. So I'm going back to it. So I'll be up there for the next 4 days out of the reach of cell phones, which is fantastic. Yeah, that's where we'll be.
Yeah, I think we can all use some of that outdoor therapy right now.
Right.
Since you're such an avid outdoors person, what's the one piece of gear that you can't live without?
Oh, I think my thing would be like the fire striker, just like ferric rod and, you know, steel. Because other than that, if I can have a fire, I can make do with anything and everything. You know, I can get water, I can get all that stuff. But, you know, if you don't have a fire, it could be a bad way pretty quick, depending on circumstances. So for me, I think I would definitely
You strike your own fires. You don't just like light a match and toss it into some newspaper like everyone else.
Yeah, because funnily enough, like when you hear those two options, obviously striking a match and throwing it on a newspaper sounds like and should be the easiest of those two, 100%. But if you actually spend time, like take 1 hour on a weekend and Walkabout Outfitter or REI or Appalachian Trail Outfitters and buy a ferricum rod and some steel and, you know, a little camping, or even Walmart if that's your closest option, and go to their camping section and pick one up. And then just go outside and actually learn what you're doing and how to do it. You'll not really ever reach for another bag of matches again, because it's just so much more efficient and so much faster and waterproof. You know, if you fall in the river with that thing in your pocket, pull it out, you can still get sparks. If you fall in the river with matches in your pocket, that's a bummer. And I like to do things that feel like you earned it. And I always feel like you earned it if you strike it rather than just like flick it.
Absolutely. So that sounds pretty hardcore. Is it tough? Like, do you ever get into a situation where it just isn't working for you and you're really frustrated? Like, I'm thinking about Survivor and all those other shows where they just can't get the fire started.
Yeah, no, honestly, no, I have not had that. I think also a lot of those things, you know, Survivor shows, Naked and Afraid and all that stuff, they're playing on the fact that's dramatic television. Obviously, I guess you could have hard time getting it. And I'm sure that there's been times that I'm not recalling right now that have been more frustrating than others. But with a flint and steel, I have never not gotten a campfire going, knock on wood, to date. You know, this weekend, if it does happen, I will tell you about it. But I'm hoping not. The one time I do get frustrated, you can do, like, I don't know if you've ever looked up, like, a bow drill, like starting a fire with a bow drill. That's a great, I think all of that stuff is cool to know. You know, the ways that you might have to do something if those situations are thrust upon you and that's all you've got is a shoelace and you're in the forest, you could make a bow drill. That is certainly not the way I choose to do it when I make a campfire, but it is cool to know how to do it. But I get real frustrated with that one really quickly, because it can either work great and all systems are go and you have a good campfire going in like under 20 minutes, or it can be 2 hours later and you've effectively just worn out every muscle in your arm and you still are no closer to being like warm at all, except for the sweat you generated trying to get a fire going. So
just for the listeners, just so that the listeners understand, a bow drill is, I'm having a hard time describing it because I've never actually tried it. Can you just describe real quickly what it looks like?
Yeah. So it's a bow looks like a bow and arrow that you're just holding sideways, I guess like a crosscut saw, like you're trying to chop a log or something. you have a little spindle that's vertical. Cord is wrapped around. So the idea is when you push and pull, you're spinning that thing at a higher rate of speed than your hands could spin it. Because, I mean, it's essentially, it's just a friction fire. It's the same thing that just the bow makes it more efficient because you can get a longer, faster spin than with your hands, which is the other alternative. But the vertical spindle that goes around those things, you know, the wood that you choose for those has got to be important. You choose something like pine or whatever that's got a lot of sap and stuff in it, all you're going to do is polish it into a really, really, really shiny piece. You're not actually going to get any kind of a fire out of that. So, but those are lessons that you learn the hard way. So maybe I just save somebody some time.
Yeah, well, those Boy Scout skills are coming into play right now.
Yeah, all my merit badges are like categorically stashed away in my head, so I can hopefully pull from them at will and have little nuggets of insight. But
yeah, well, it sounds like it's serving you well. So I think we're going to have to wrap it up here because we're almost out of time. But before we do, I just want to ask you, other than this backpacking trip that you're on your way to right now, what's your next big Virginia outdoor adventure?
Yeah, I'm really excited. So it's myself and my dog. So I have two dogs for anybody who is a dog person, Boots and Camper. Ironically, their names are kind of jokes on themselves because Boots likes to camp and Camper likes to hike. So Camper
that
and
is
I.
So adorable.
It's hilarious. Like I didn't plan it that way, but that's just how the shakedown went. But Camper and I are going to be starting February 7th in Harper's Ferry and working our way south on the first leg of our Appalachian Trail flip flop. So I'm really looking forward to getting all that done. So in the process, you know, I'm also using these hikes and stuff in the meantime, these back trips as kind of shakedowns because I've trimmed some fat with some gear that I have purchased and I'm trying to figure out how best to use it and excited for my next adventure, which is southbound on the Appalachian Trail in February.
Do you know offhand how much of the Appalachian Trail passes through Virginia?
Yeah, 544 miles.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so how many miles will you be doing on this part of your trip?
Well, hopefully, I'm giving myself until April 20th, which I think that equates to like 79 days, because then I can be back in time for our Earth Day cleanup, and then hopefully another season of Trashy Tuesdays, and take a nice little reprieve, and then start up the second. Because it's also, I hate hiking when it's hot. This weekend is different, because thankfully we have a little bit nicer weather, but I don't like being hot, and I don't like being in humidity. It's just gross, and I don't dig it. So stopping in April is kind of a sweet way to avoid a lot of that. And I'm also sure that the hiking bubble next year is going to be huge because a lot of the hikes got sidebarred this year. But I'm hoping in 79 days to make it as close to Springer Mountain in Georgia as I can, which I think Harper's Ferry is like mile like 1012 or 19 or something like that. So the shakedown comes to like 12 miles a day, 12 or 13 miles a day for 79 days would be what would get me there. But of that, you know, there's some days when you're going through like the Priest and those areas down in Montebello where I only ever feel like doing 8 miles a day because those are a hard 8 miles. And then there's times in Shenandoah where you can do 22 miles a day because it's not that hard of hiking. So I'm going to give it a run and see the best that I can do. Bottom line, I'm going to be outside for 79 days, which is the highlight of my year. So I'll take whatever I can get.
Yeah, well, Brian, I wish you luck. That sounds amazing. There are so many people who, you know, hope to hike even sections of the Appalachian Trail in their lifetime. And what you're about to embark on is going to be amazing. Hopefully you'll come back and share with us a little bit after it's over how it went on another episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Well, Brian Bell, founder of Keep Virginia Cozy, thank you so much for talking with me today and sharing information about your amazing nonprofit and all of the exciting work that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having us, and we appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, we're really looking forward to anybody who hears this and comes and joins us to get outside. That's the main goal. You know, the outdoors, like everywhere, are for everyone. And we just want anybody who joins us outside to feel welcome there. Forward to meeting anybody who does.
Thanks so much, Brian. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe to Virginia Outdoor Adventures on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you may listen to podcasts. If you enjoy the show, please rate, review, or share with a friend, and follow us on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Until next week, adventure on.